Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Cross Commission Podcast. My name is Saif Fakadu, and I'm one of your hosts for the show today. On the other line with me is our other host, Jake Nazar. Jake, great to be back on the mics with you, kid. How you doing?
I'm well. Well, you can't hold us down for long.
Exactly. You can't hold a good pod down for long, right, Jake?
I was thinking. I was looking up. I'm like, when was the last time we had a week where we didn't do a pod? And I was like, in season. I was like, I think it's been like 4 years. And we got one in under the gun. So.
Oh, yeah. That's
serendipity. The streak goes on.
Exactly. Serendipity shout out.
There was even one during like 2021 where no one was available. And I did one solo. I remember there was one in 2019 where... I jumped on with Ryan after I conscientiously objected to the tournament.
Oh, yeah, after the GVA. Yeah, of course. Chris and I think we were either up in Philly or I think it was New England, 2019.
So. Yeah, after the usurping.
Yeah. But yeah, shout out to our man, Zach Capozzi, friend of the site. It was actually just serendipity. I right? Just reached out to him last week and then you and I weren't able to make it happen, but you know, already had kind of Zach scheduled for Thursday, so perfect. Great talk to him. Yeah, obviously with everything he's doing, Lex reference. But Jake, always a pleasure to be back on the mics with my man. Great day of games. I mean, we just kind of fresh off of the Hopkins Syracuse game. So did you want to maybe just jump there just because it's kind of the freshest one around, but like the rest of the day is just definitely upsets Penn State, you know, break up the Nittany Lions, you know, this juggernaut out of Happy Valley.
Jeff Tambroni addressing his haters.
Tams is back. He's handling all family business this year. He's taking care of everything he needs to take care of. But why not? Let's start with Tams. I think it was both of ours team to watch, Penn State, right? Maybe for concerning reasons, but just like, you know, we thought or something we wanted to see. But Penn State certainly given us that, Jake. I mean, what are they, 5-1 now after this beat, this win over Cornell? It's three straight Ivy wins that were top 10 opponents. Penn State just really like showing out this year, offensively, defensively. I don't want to steal your thunder. You had a great take about how they're different styles played each game, but they're still able to make it happen. But today was a big day for Matt Traynor, 3 goals, Jack Traynor, 2 goals, 2 assists, TJ Malone. Somewhat of a quiet day, just 1 goal, 1 assist, but you know, there's only 16 combined goals for both teams, and Penn State really kind of in a defensive effort. You know, we've been talking a lot about their shooting and their offense last couple of weeks, but this game, Jake, really impressive being able to shut down the and just able to hold this kind of potent Cornell offense to six goals. Just just thoughts about Penn State in general, and you know, this game. Obviously, I'd love to hear your take.
Yeah, I mean, this is Penn State did not get a single vote in the media poll in the preseason. Not a one, and they won 3 games last year. I mean, like, you win 3 games, you don't get a vote in the media poll the next year. Syracuse won 4 and was 21st, so.
Just outside.
Yeah. You know, like, I guess you could, you know, kind of say that. But not one. They were picked to finish 5th in the Big Ten. And now, you look at them, you watch the way they played, and I was thinking this. I think I saw this take pop up on the Twitter, kind of this week. And I was kind of marinating in it. Listen, you know, Maryland is the favorite in the Big Ten until Maryland loses a Big Ten game. Like, yeah. that's just the way it works. Someone's got to beat them. You know, the boxing has the term, the, because in boxing, you know, there's a million championship belts. But there's the, you know, they call the lineal championship, which is basically the lineal championship is you're the guy who beat the man who beat the man. And if you're the lineal champion, you're the world champion. You beat the man. So until someone beats Maryland, in the Big Ten, you know, again, like teams are different year to year, but Maryland, we're talking here, is one. Maryland hasn't lost a Big Ten game in, like, we're going on close to four years now. However, if we're talking, you know, from what we've seen so far to this point in the season, I think you can make a strong argument that Penn State's been the best team in the Big Ten. They've played really good lacrosse. They are, in terms of adjusted offensive efficiency, I don't know if we've kind of updated the results of the games have been updated. I think coming in, they were fourth. I don't think the results have been updated. Through today's games. I think coming into this week, they were fifth in adjusted offensive efficiency. However, I think if you take today's games into account offensively, if I'm looking at it, I'm going Rutgers 1, Penn State, Michigan 2-3, Maryland Hopkins 4-5, Ohio State 6. That's just kind of how I'm kind of placing it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that may seem low on Ohio State, but I don't know what to make of Ohio State at this point. I don't know.
Can I make a request?
I can't make a read on Ohio State. Go ahead.
Can we just not have them on the pick 'em? Because I can't control myself, Jake. If I see Ohio State not pick 'em, I'm gonna pick 'em. And I need to stop. I feel you. I don't know what's going on sometimes over there. But I can't quit them. I can't quit them. You know, if OSU's on our pick 'em board, I had a 7 out of 8 parlay, and guess which team broke my heart today.
Oh, God. I think we need intervention.
Exactly. I'm asking for one right now. I want to go. I want to go on the bus. You don't need to surprise me. You don't need to put your cards away. You don't need to say anything. I know.
I will drive myself.
Take an Uber? Like, what are we talking? Let's go. Let's leave. I'm ready to go.
Send me the location. Oh, jeez. Oh, God. That's... I gotta push. Well, how to say? I'm putting them off. I don't know. I don't know what's going on there. I'm putting them off. I can't do it. So defensively, I think Maryland's number one. I think Hopkins is number two. And I think Penn State's probably three.
Mm-hmm.
And then Rutgers four. I mean, the way Penn State played today defensively was fantastic. And I thought they were fantastic. I thought they were fantastic. I haven't seen them look so rangy, athletic defensively. I mean, since everything with Penn State is since 2019, really, you know, the way you're 2020, the way you just, you know, for obvious reasons, you know, considering the way it's been the last couple of years, but it was so impressive the way they were able to attack Cornell and throw them off their game. There were times where, I mean, they quick double teams. They knew Cornell without Michael Long did not have a true table setting, you know, a quarterback. I mean, CJ Kirst is, you know, a phenomenal talent and a great Dodger. And he had his moments for sure where, you know, it looked like he maybe was going to be able to pull Cornell back into the game and maybe over the top by himself. But he's right now, he is a, I make this comparison, not in terms of a, just a style, not in terms of, I say that he's this kind of, you know, he's as good or, but just in terms of a play style kind of guy. CJ Kirst is Jarrett Bernhardt kind of in terms of an attackman. He gets for himself, you know, that's his kind of, you know, the way that he attacks. And so that's where Michael Long is so important for Cornell, is that he's the guy who can orchestrate and, you know, feed and create for everyone and just be the, you know, the steady hand for everybody else. And that the way that Logan Wisnauskas could play off Jared really well and kind of be more of a ball handler at times. And the Maryland had a lot of other guys who could as well. But Penn State knew that if we can get the ball out of Kirst's hands and make other guys who aren't as comfortable carrying the ball, then we could just be really quick on their hands. They're able to do it, and they were so quick to double team, and they were aggressive. They attacked them, a lot of havoc. But anytime it even looked like Cornell had an open room to shoot, like, Penn State just closed the ground so quick. They were rangy. There was a stick in the lane, and it affected the shot. And it just never felt like Cornell got comfortable at all. So, I mean, you look at that, and I think you've got – so in the Big Ten, you know, who's kind of the top three in offense and defense? I think Penn State right now is the one. And then you look on the face-off side of it. Are they with Mullins? You know, Rutgers, I think better than they've been a bit this year, potentially. I think they've got some options. Newman went 11-19 while DeGenio struggled. I think that was a benefit, you know, for them, because DeGenio's been strong this year. He's won 59%, but he struggled today, so they were able to go for Joe Newman, who's won 58%. So I think Rutgers has done well generally, but I don't know that they've faced kind of a top-notch opposition yet that they're going to face in the Big Ten. Hopkins has got solid depth there. Generally kind of, you know, usual. Hopkins is generally pretty strong year in, year out. Mullins has been Penn State. They're definitely, they're stronger than they've been there since when definitely much, much improved from last year, where they struggled to replace Jerry Arcari. Mullins went 10-20. He's at 54%. He was really strong against Penn. Otherwise, he's been around. He's hovered around 50. That's an area where maybe they could fall back to the pack a bit. So I don't know. I think face-offs maybe come back. I mean, and then you look in goal. Jack Frastian, say 57%. I mean, he looks rock solid. Is he? I mean, Big Ten's got some strong goal. I mean, he looks very good. I love what he does out of the cage. He plays with a lot of confidence. That seems to be something you can say for, you know, a lot of these Big Ten goalies, is that they play with a confidence and a self-assuredness, and their teams seem to feed off that. Brian Rubel's kind of given Maryland that juice, and he's currently at 59% in his three games. So, you know, he's been strong. Marcel, obviously, Tim Marcel for Hopkins, we'll talk about, has been, I mean, goodness. I mean, Tim Marcel's this year is, I mean, he, aside from, I mean, Virginia and St. Joe's were, I mean, those are two of the toughest shooting teams you're going to face. I don't know that it's necessarily he was bad, but on the balance, Tim Marcel's the best goalie Hopkins has had since Pierce Bassett. And, I mean, obviously you can argue that, you know, there's, you know.
You can make a case for Jesse Schwartzman. No, I'm just kidding. That's how much I love Tim Marcel right now.
Jesse Schwartzman's before Pierce Bassett, so.
Well, he's even as good as Jesse. You had to go even further back. That's how happy I am with our goaltending, Jake. Since Jesse Schwartzman.
Oh man,
this is the first time I've been. Pierce was pretty good, but Jesse.
I mean, and granted, you know, again, like the goalie play at Hopkins has been a, you know. You know, the long running, you know, gets more ink has been spilled about that than, you know, the Baltimore Orioles lease situation. But he's been fantastic. So, I mean, look, the Big Ten, this is a topic of one of the topics, I think, of the week, is that the Big Ten in 2023 might be is this the deepest the Big Ten's ever been?
Ooh, okay.
I think so, yeah. Because I think I think Michigan looks pretty good too.
Up to 2017 year, up to before Rutgers went, like, you know, 0 for the rest of the year. You know,
when even then, Michigan wasn't a factor in 17.
Exactly. This isn't six teams deep. It has not been six teams deep.
Hey, Michigan looks. Michigan going out there. Michigan the last 2 weeks.
Forgive me. Five teams deep. Ohio State. I can't quit, Jake. It's right there.
Ohio State. We're not. Ohio State.
It's a moment of separation. We just need this for a little bit.
We're just on a break. We're on a break.
Exactly. Need a break. Everything's good. We just need a break.
We're just gonna. You know. We're gonna let you. What's Ohio State? You got, you know, Detroit, Mercy, Denver. Then we're gonna reconvene for Rutgers in a couple weeks, and we'll see where we're at. we'll see where things are. But
just need some space right now.
That, like, Michigan, that Marquette game was not great. But coming back the way they did against Delaware and Harvard, you know, the two just preposterous goals aside, you know, even with those, I think two road games too for Michigan against Delaware and Harvard. Like those are those are statements, I think. You know, in the way they played those two games. I think Michigan's definitely, if you compare it to last year, and where they were at, you know, last year with the seven, because last year they beat Delaware, and it was similar. They beat them at home, I think. So I think beating Delaware on the road, much different than beating Delaware at on the road. Delaware, we'll also have to see kind of how it plays out. When they beat in Delaware, Delaware was 4-1. Their wins were NJIT, Mount, St. Joe's, Monmouth. This Delaware's beaten Lafayette, Mount, St. John's, UMBC, Monmouth. So the UMBC win, impressive from Delaware. And Delaware's only other loss is a one-goal loss to Nova, who looks, you know, obviously really impressive right now. So, and we'll see. I mean, if Delaware can, you know, keep it rolling in CAA play, that can prove to be a strong sign from Michigan. And then the Harvard one, they lost to Harvard, and the Harvard one was where they got exposed last year. You know, like that was one where it looked like, oh, you weren't ready for, that was like the not ready for primetime, you know, lost for Michigan. And that was, I mean, that was where it all fell apart after that. And Harvard, you know, after Dewey defeats Truman game against Virginia, beat Bucknell comfortably, and then went out and beat, had a comfortable win against Vermont as well. So they come back and had some solid performances since then. And Michigan got behind in this one as well. And just, what was, they were behind, goodness, Michigan was behind, it was 8:54 of quarter two, they were behind 9-3, and then just went up 16-11 at one point. I mean, just completely took over the game. So they got two big ones the next 2 weeks against Notre Dame and Hopkins. So yeah, I think Michigan's definitely better than they were a year ago. Yeah, I was like, aside from that Marquette, yeah, I mean, it's, you can't do the aside game. You play the games, you know, and they didn't. They needed to get that win, but otherwise, it's that Virginia game where we talked about it. They were in that game. I mean, they played. I mean, no one else has played Virginia as close as Michigan has for 60 minutes. Really, they played Virginia as close as anyone has. That was truly that was a fourth quarter game. Virginia pulled away or like with less than 10 minutes to go in that game. And it was week one. So, I mean, Virginia's kind of just kept getting better, I suppose you could say. But so I guess I get back to the original kind of point with Penn State and Cornell. I guess I don't know if Penn State's the best team. I think you could say they've played the best. And they've got obviously the best string of, you know, wins. Yale, Penn, and Cornell doing the Ivy sweep. Is remarkably impressive. You know, I mean, that's probably the best run of wins anyone's got in the country right now. Aside from, I guess, maybe Notre Dame going Georgetown, Maryland, Ohio State in the way they did. I mean, but so what Penn State's done. But we'll learn if they beat Maryland in College Park, which they did do in 2019, mm-hmm. which is when they, you know, that's when they stamped in 19 that was their year in the conference. That's when I guess we'll learn if, you know, it's, you know, Penn State's. I mean, I think they're, you know, I think it's with each game, we've just learned a bit. That's the thing with this team is with each game, we've learned a bit more about them as far as kind of what their levels. When they beat Yale, it was that game looked more like last year's whenever Yale was it was a fluke. It just was. And this year when they beat it, it looked like that was a solid performance. I think they looked like a top 20-ish kind of team when they beat Yale. And I think we kind of looked at that game as maybe they could be a top 20-ish team, kind of like the year they were when they didn't have a Ament. And then
I think that's exactly what I was thinking. 2018, they had like 4 one-goal losses, multiple overtime, fourth quarter collapse games. And they were, you know, it was a bad season, below 500. Last year, they had 5-1 goal games, so a 2-goal loss to St. Joe's. Again, we don't play, you know, what if a lot, but you are what your record is. But there was something there that there was that they could build on. I didn't think anything like this. Like, I was thinking 500, making the Big East, like, Big Ten Final Four for the Big Ten tournament would be like a reasonable goal, and they're just blowing that out of the water right now.
Yeah, then they go out and beat then they play Penn, and I kind of thought they would beat, I don't know, I picked them to beat Penn, but I thought, you know, that'd be a close game, and then they blew Penn out, and it was like, okay, this team, this is a team that can, you know, this team that can play, like, this could be a potential, you know, tournament team that we're looking at. And now you're looking at it, and it's like, yeah, we're having the conversation of, is this the best team in the Big Ten? And so, yeah, like, the Maryland game is kind of the next kind of, obvious if they beat Maryland, yeah, I think you're definitely talking about them as, you know, best team in the league. And if they lose, I don't think it says it's not. Like, if, you know, with what they've done, you're for sure looking at them as, you know, I mean, they've got Hopkins and Rutgers at home, and Big Ten, but, you know, plenty of chances to just continue, you know, marching towards, you know, a strong season here. And, you know, they've had some, Tams has had some strong seasons and strong teams. But I think this is, you know, after they lost 2020, you know, because that was 2020 was going to be, who knows how far it was. That was going to be a great year for them. You know, they were going to be a contender with Grant. This is going to be, you know, they're going to have some, great games, you know, and great nights at Panzer this year. And definitely get something for them to get up for. A great team for them to rally behind. And Panzer is one of the, you know, best environments in the sport. And, you know, it's exciting. It's, you know, it's when I'm glad that we don't have to kind of do the, you know, it felt like we were kind of teetering towards, you know, the conversation, did they get everything they wanted, you know, when they hired Tams, you know, like in that, I guess that kind of, you know, conversation. Like, I'm glad we're not having that conversation, you know. I'm glad the conversation we're having is, you know, hey, you know, he's got himself another really great team. And this is a team, like, they got, you know, they got Hopkins at a Saturday night and Panzer in a couple weeks. Like, that's gonna be heat. They got Rutgers on a Friday night at Panzer, April 21st, to close out the regular season. They're going to play Maryland on a Saturday at dusk, you know, in College Park. That's going to be, like, these are going to be some, the Big Ten this year is going to be a gauntlet. And, you know, there's going to be some, they're back, when they've been in the mix, they've, you know, been, they've played some great games. And even the last couple years, you know, they've had some great games when they've kind of been out of the mix. And now they've got a really fun team. It's good to see them back in the mix. They definitely got a strong team that, again, as we talked about, like, we're kind of looking for teams that are complete, and I don't know that they've put it together for all together for one game, but they've shown flashes now. And, you know, they showed it offensively against Penn. They showed it defensively here against Cornell. They're showing flashes of, you know, a potential of a complete mix. That's, you know, something to watch out for as we get in, you know, over the long haul here.
Jake, you're absolutely right. I mean, Marquette game on the 18th, but after that, Penn State is must-see TV, Jake. Big Ten, ESPNU, Big Ten, ESPNU, Big Ten is games after Marquette. Maryland, Ohio State, Hopkins, Michigan, Rutgers, four of those five games are like night games, and Ohio State's the only one that's like, you know, a nooner. Everything else is like dust bowl or night game. It's going to be, you know, one of the hotter tickets out there. And it really is coming, kind of coming out of nowhere. I mean, you noted at the beginning, no one put them even in the top 20, and just what they're able to do, you know, they're able to do this year is just a, you know, kind of a testament, just like, you know, almost kind of like that Forgot About Dre song, you know, everyone kind of forgot about Tams, and just like, you know, still here. It's going to be an exciting finish for them. I'm with you. I'm really excited about that Maryland game. And that's what we always say, like, that's kind of why March and February games are so exciting, is because, like, once you're done, you kind of, if you did what you're supposed to do in the out-of-conference games, you essentially, like, vacuum seal that freshness, you know what I mean? And then, like, once you start playing the your own conference mates and everybody else in the conference that they're supposed to do, it's just like a, you know, self-propelling, like, kind of like motor, because, you know, everybody has pretty good numbers, then you start playing each other, so you don't ever dip that much. And that's kind of what happened to the Ivy last year. I don't think Big Ten's going to get five teams in there, but I mean, there's definitely a scenario where I could see that, you know, if especially certain things like fall to you know, Michigan beats Notre Dame, that type of thing, you know what I mean? Like, that would just be a big chip for Michigan, and then, you know, if they get into the tournament, Big Ten tournament, win it, like, you know, a team that nobody really thought of, you know, it could be Michigan Penn State in the Big Ten final this year. Would anyone have had that, you know, like in January? So, pretty sad, but yeah, just sticking in the Big Ten. Hopkins traveled up to Syracuse for a game with so many storylines. There was Mikey Powell Day. They hung his 22 next to Gary Gates' 22 in the Raptors at Syracuse. Definitely a moment, you know, for
Katie Rowan's 21. So
exactly, yeah, the big day for Syracuse fans, but bigger day for Hopkins fans. I mean, Hopkins comes out with a victory, 11-9, a gritty, gutsy, you know, come from behind win by the Blue Jays. And Isam, I thought, especially I remember that in our DMs after Syracuse scored the second goal, I was like, I got a bad feeling about this game. I did not like how it was starting, but Hopkins able to regroup, as you noted earlier. Tim Marcille, just, you know, just my favorite goalie since Jesse. Well, for wearing that Hopkins blue, just comes up big with a career best 21 saves. There was an interesting note, don't have the exact numbers, but Hopkins hitting 11 goals has been like extremely important for the Jays in terms of like those games are, I think they're showing like 10-2 in the last 2 years. So they hit that magic number. Syracuse came out, not flat or anything. I think they were grinding it out, but it's just like, they find someone in the, I didn't catch the announcer's name at the Cuse game, but not Evan Malloy, but the actual play-by-play guy. But he did say, like, what I kind of think that I always say, like, turnovers are always costly. You don't want to have any of them, but like the inopportune ones at the worst moment when you're trying to make that run or you're trying to extend that lead, that's the stuff that really does come back to bite you. And then if you add up all those, that usually makes up the difference in the game. And I think there's plenty of possessions Syracuse would, you know, definitely have liked to have. You know, that's a lot has to do with Tim in goal. Like, you know, but some of those shots are the kind of ones that they always say that they want the offense to shoot because they're, you know, like 16, 15 yards out type of things. And when your goalie's on, those are the ones that should be able to make a save, or at least, like, you know, have a better than 50-50 chance of making a save on those. So, Marcel, big day. Hopkins offense comes up. You know, Russell Melendez, big three goals. Gary Dennett has two. My boy Ryan Davis up there with the man goal, with just like the dodge and the getting in there and give Hopkins the 10-9 lead. And then, we had a long pole goal at the end to make the difference of two goals. But definitely loving what I'm seeing from Hopkins. Jacob is kind of saying that even in the UVA game. I was, you know, watched it live. That game was like, you know, aside from the first quarter, and that's going to be our word for the pod today, aside. But aside from the first quarter, Hopkins, you know, they were in it. I mean, like, and it was like something I always say, like, especially like late stage Petro years, like, just, it didn't really seem like, you know, about that life when it comes to ground balls or you know, when it, getting the that possession, that really important possession in the midfield, like they didn't do it enough, obviously, to Virginia. Virginia won by 5 goals, but there was a, you know, obviously didn't, like, you know, flinch, or lack of a more sophisticated word, like they, you know, they were really in it. And I felt like, you know, that kind of, these type of games gives you that mental fortitude, and you know, they're able to dig out from a multiple goal deficit at one point to beat this. It kind of reminded me a little bit of the Georgetown game. Georgetown, yes, like, you know, still you thought like maybe they were just gonna, you guys just got enough, they're gonna wear them out. Hopkins just kept answering the bell and they kept coming back, and then in the fourth quarter they really, you know, just kind of had like a pivotal transition where they kind of took control. But Hopkins one game below what I was expecting. Number, I still love the 11-4, my prediction at the end of the beginning of the year. But 5-3 at this point in the season, I'll take it, Jake.
Yeah, this was, I was, you know, kind of tweeting it out. This was a this was a gut check. This was a gut check win for Hopkins. Because you look at it, I mean, this is the third game in 8 days. It's going to be, by the end of this stretch, 5 games in 16 days that they're looking at before Big Ten play. But you look next week, what they've got. They got, they're going at Navy, the Navy team that is, I mean, with all due respect to the troops, in a complete tailspin right now. That's one you got to win, and I think they will. Then they come back and they get Delaware at home. 2 games in 3 days is going to be very tough, as we know. We saw what happened last year in that second, coming off of Delaware. The second game of the third day. But this year they get it at home as opposed to having to go to Delaware. So that's, you know, kind of the better end of it. But if you can do, if you can take care of those two, but even now, if you split it, you're 6-4. So you split it, you're 6-4. That means you go 2-3 in Big Ten play going into the Big Ten. You're guaranteed, regardless of what happens in, you go 2-3 in Big Ten play, guaranteed, regardless of what happens in the Big Ten tournament, you're eligible for the tournament. You're eligible for the NCAAs with strong, you know, metrics. Mm-hmm. So you're in the mix. It means you are, with a win, you're 2-3 in Big Ten play gets you, with a win in the first round of the Big Ten tournament, pretty much locks you up for the day, the dance. It means that a positive, it gets you 6-4 in Big Ten play, means a winning record in Big Ten play, basically guaranteed. You can, you know,
stamp it,
locks you in. It means at 5-3, if Hopkins wins those 2 games next week, at 7-3, Hopkins needs, I mean, Hopkins is, barring anything short of an absolute collapse in Big Ten play, is an NCAA tournament team. I mean, like, just a collapse. Okay. So, well, that's that side of it, you know, there's that end of it that we, you know, see. But it was, so you needed it for that, you know, kind of end of, like, that's, you know, it was that kind of hinge point of the season. Much in the same way that I think last year's Navy-Delaware, the way the Navy-Delaware 2-game stretch last year was the hinge point of the season for them. You know, they were 4-3 going into it, and if they had split it, they'd have been 5-4 going into Big Ten play. And that would have put them at, you know, potentially a winning, I don't think it would have gotten to the tournament, you know, by any means. It wouldn't have, but it would have changed things potentially, you know. You know, potential, just different positive vibe, you know. Just the way, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, the problem with being in the Big Ten last year was that, you know, just the way they were at was, to get in, you had to win the Big Ten, and to win the Big Ten, you had to beat Maryland, and you weren't beating Maryland last year. Like, that was just the way it was. But they just, that Navy-Delaware stretch was just kind of a threshold of their season, and they lost, they whiffed. This felt like a crucial kind of stretch of their season, not just, again, the record-wise, I think, key, but I think mentality-wise, very key. This game was, it was a rivalry game, as we all saw. Cole Kurtz scores the first goal of the game. He turns around and he screams at the Hopkins bench. Like, you knew what this game was from the, you know, the minute it starts. It's like, oh, okay. Like, you know, like it's, that's the kind of game it was going to be. There were,
can we call those Owen Murphys from now? Both as a term of endearment. Everybody listening to this pod knows I love Owen.
I mean, the Murphy ones are a bit like, that one, I'm not saying there's a justification. Like, you see where that one comes from, you know? Like, it's
understood. Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's, it's kind of like, you know, there's just sort of a, and like, this is a rivalry game, so I see where that's there, that this, where it comes the same way, like where it comes from. You know, it's a rivalry game. Not that I have any, I'm just saying, like, when it happened, it was just like, oh, okay. Like, it's okay. Like, you know, we know where we stand here. Like, this is,
game one.
Yeah. Exactly. It's just like, I just remember the last time I saw something, you know, like that in the same sort of, you know, not the same. I mean, that was like, it happens. I remember Wisnowskis, you know, like, not that he didn't screw the bench, but, you know, I remember, like, he, you know, kind of a little bit something like, but, like, cursed legit. Like, it was just like, that was like at the bench. Like, it was like, oh, like, you know, like, it was, you know, it wasn't like the Peyton Cormier, you know, like, just straight up, like, at the goalie, like, oh, geez, okay, then.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But it was, yeah, I mean, it was like, you know, this is, you know, we have, like, the rules of engagement have been, you know, outlined here. And then there were 12 penalties. Now, granted, some of these were a little, the refs were, you know, I guess they wanted their, you know, this is a big game, and I guess they seem to want their
5 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. It seemed.
It was so weird. It was like, Hopkins would be down two men, and then they would call like a procedural call in Syracuse to wipe out the
yeah, men. They'd need to kind of like balance. It's like, it was, that's the thing. It's like the 12, some of the penalties were legit. There was some of them were rivalry, you know, physical, and some of them also were just like, what, like, okay, fellas, like, we get it, you know, like, but yeah, you know, there was energy, there was, you know, it was chippy. I mean, yeah, there was, you know, it was a rivalry game, you knew it, there was chippiness to it, it was physical, and it was a big game for both teams. Obviously, there was the Powell's element to it. You know, you had the Petro factor. You know, mm-hmm. It's all that goes into it. It's a big game. It's Hopkins Syracuse. There's, you know, not much more needs to be said. And it's 9-8. In with six, you know, seven, when Hopkins gets the ball in that possession, there's 8 minutes left in the game. And at that point in time, Hopkins seemed to just decide, you know, it sounds cliche, but Hopkins seemed to just decide, we want this more.
We're not losing and, this game.
Like, yeah, like, we're not, like, or maybe not, we want this, but Hopkins seemed to say, all right, like, we're going to take this to here, and if you want to win, you got to match it.
Men of, like, will. You got to show them what will really is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like, this is where we're going to take it, And if you want to win, you got to take it here with you. Like, this is where it's going to be. And Syracuse couldn't get there. And I think that showed the maturation, the physical and mental fortitude that Hopkins has developed as a program that they have not had in a long time, a long, long time, that Syracuse doesn't have right now. And that's what Hopkins needed to prove, that they could, in a pivotal point of their season, in a game that they, you know, again, there's no must wins till there are must wins, but on the road, rivalry, Cuse, you know, wanted this one bad with, you know, the Mikey Power jersey retirement. Clearly, they had a lot of, you know, they came into this game amped up. They had lost three in a row. This was a pivot. This was a key point of Syracuse's season. If they were able to get this one, they could really use it as a launch pad. This was a moment in Hopkins' season as kind of a, clearly they looked at it as a line in the sand of where they could say that, like, just, you know, no, like, doesn't matter if you're on a week's rest, we've played three games in 8 days. Cause that, you know, that's kind of been a talking point for, like, I mean, goodness, like the whole season with Hopkins, they play too many games. You know, they're putting themselves at a disadvantage again in these games by playing, wait, you know, two more games than their opponents. And they, you know, all their opponents come in at this address, and they seem just like, no, doesn't matter. We're going to go out there and we're going to take it. And that's what they did. They, in that possession, down 9-8, they, and Will Mark full has also made a bunch of saves, but they kept getting the ground ball, and they got the ground ball, and they got the ground ball. And eventually, Dylan Bauer drew a penalty. And they went man up, and Syracuse killed the penalty off. To their credit, both teams' man-down defenses played really well all day. Some of it, I mean, Hopkins' deep man-down defense going, holding Cuse's man up to two for seven is amazing. Some of it was just kind of Marseille, and then some of it was just good fortune because Cuse got, like, good looks still, because Cuse's man-up offense is just fantastic. And then Hopkins' man-up only went 1 for 5. But even then, I thought they got good looks too. Man up combined, only both teams went 3 for 12. But by the end, just after it expired, Matt Collison got the goal to tie for 9-9. And then from there, Hopkins just got every single ground ball. Some of them were on faceoffs, didn't matter, wherever. Hopkins physically, Syracuse got one shot. After they took the lead at 9-8, Syracuse had one shot the rest of the game. They didn't have the ball. And I don't mean they didn't have the ball in the sense of they didn't win faceoffs. I meant they physically could not get the ball. They couldn't get it. Like, Hopkins wouldn't let them get it. It was a toughness win. They were just physically tougher in, like, when it, like, there's a great, you know, Jay Billis article from like 15 years ago when he was like, what does toughness mean? And it was like, you know, and it was describing like what, you know, toughness looks like. And he, you know, and like what coaches described to him, what toughness looked like. And he, you know, and it was like that. It wasn't, you know, sometimes what, you know, the, over-exaggerated, you know, kind of, you know, more characteristics of it, but it's this stuff. It's Hopkins going 7 of 2 for ground balls in the fourth quarter. It's winning all the key faceoffs after after Cuse goes up, after they go 9-8, they won the next one on a faceoff violation. But from there, Hopkins ties 9-9. Ground ball for Matt Narewski. Hopkins, Ryan Evans, taking that lick, taking that hit to score the goal. Faceoff win, ground ball by Alex Mazzone. Turnover by failed clear for Cuse, ground ball by Alex Mazzone. Granted, there was a they decided there was a turnover. I think it was a you know some sort of offside something.
Milliman with I was with him. I was like, what is going on? Can I get an explanation here?
Hunter Dronski forces a turnover on Cole Kerst to win the game. Hopkins' toughness is Hopkins' short stick defensive midfielders back-to-back weeks making game-winning cause turnovers on the last defensive possession of the game. That's toughness. 11-9, the game's not over. There's 20 seconds left. With the face-off, it's not over. It's Hopkins wins the face-off, ground ball by Jack Hawley. Hopkins doesn't lose a face-off in the last, you know, 6 minutes of the game. And they win, aside from a face-off violation, every face-off that's contested in the last, you know, 10 minutes of the game, they win. Every ground ball that is contested, they win. That's the toughness plays. And that's not to say that Syracuse is soft or any, but it's just that they pushed it to a level that ultimately Syracuse could not match. And if you're Cuse, that's what Cuse just hasn't been able to. Cuse as a program just isn't winning these types of games. Like they're just not. They're not at a point where, if you look at the games they're losing, the game to Duke last week, you know, overtime, this type of game, couldn't pull it out. If you look at some of their games last year, one goal lost to Carolina, one goal lost to Cornell in OT, the Albany loss, like these are the games where they're coming up short. And for Hopkins, it's the areas of the team that used to be the most maligned for years for Hopkins were their short stick defensive midfielders. Now it's the backbone of their team. It's, you know, for years, you know, they were maligned as a team that wasn't a, you know, physically tough team. You know, in fact, they were seen as more of a, you know, finesse team. And now they are they're a tough team. I mean, that's their calling card, is they decided that they were going to prove that that's how they were going to win the game. They were going to out tough Cuse in the last 8 minutes of that game. They were flat out going to win every key ground ball, every physical battle, and that's how they were going to win the game. They were going to take, you know, that's how the goal is manifested. You know, they got second chance ground balls to preserve the possession. They drew a penalty. Collison scores the goal. Ryan Evans takes a big hit to score to go up 10-9, and then Hunter Dronski forces a turnover, and it leads to, you know, the run out to make it 11-9. It wasn't through X's and O's or scheme or drawing it up. It was just, you know, flat out earning it physically and being willing to, you know, put your body on the line. And that's how they did it. And so that's what I think is Hopkins is like, where do you look at Hopkins? You know, because I remember I was, you know, watching the Towson, Virginia game, and Quint, you know, and he said Hopkins is much improved and from last year. And I was thinking about that because I'm like, if you watched Hopkins, or if you were a, you know, let's say you're a casual fan, or maybe you were just watching and you just watch, you look at Hopkins' record and you saw their 5-3 and you compared it to last year, through eight games last year, they're 4-4. And then you just looked at, you know, right now on offense, through 8 games right now, they are, I think, 14th in adjusted offensive efficiency. Defensively, I think they're 20th. I mean, that's last year through the whole season, they were just put it up. Offensively, they were 34th. That's a big leap. Defensively, they were 18th. So that's definitely better. I mean, I think you're definitely seeing it, improvement there. But I was kind of thinking, if you were just kind of looking at them face on, like, would you be able to tell, like, that they're much, much improved? And I think you could, but I really think to, like, see how improved they are, I think you kind of had to just see the last 7-8 minutes of that game. I think that's what tells you just how much improved they are, is it's that kind of stuff. It's the end of the Georgetown game. It's the end of this game. It's, you know, it's even kind of the Virginia game, you know, that they got wiped out of there in the first quarter versus Virginia, and, you know, made that a competitive, you know, we're in that game, could have, you know, in that game, you know, in the second quarter, and then, you know, at points in the third. So I do think they are much improved, but I think it's, you know, through these things, it's through they have an identity as a program now, in year three under Milliman, that has taken, you know, time to develop. It took into year three, but they have their identity, for sure. But that's why I think it was, you know, the getting the win was important, because it was a win built on their program, you know, identity. And I think, you know, that's what you saw kind of through the end there. And I think that's kind of, you know, the way that they're, you know, much better, is that through the first 2 years, I don't think they had established, you know, an identity as a team or a program. And I think through the offseason, clearly they were. And we heard all that, you know, we'd heard that they, you know, the team's much more together, and, you know, they the addition of Crawley and all that, you know, and the players are built in, you know, and it's all nice to hear, but obviously, you know, it's got to turn into results, and it's turned to results as well. And that's obviously for Cuse, that's the next step that, you know, I think they're trying to see as well, is where does that, I think you kind of see on offense what they want to be. But it's the losses are, unfortunately, they have a very common theme, that they had to pull that one out, and Hopkins was took them into the deep water there late, and Cuse came up a bit short.
Jake, I think the difference, a lot of it is, I mean, I don't want to put it all on one or two players, but I feel, if you, what you just said before, like, if you look at this team, it's doing better than last year, but is it markedly different? And I think a lot of it, it's got to be the turnovers. I mean, so they still got a lot of turnovers, but it's just like, if you look at last year, and I'm just looking at, they had games where there's a 25 turnover game against Loyola. Last year, a 21 turnover game against Syracuse. Last year, a 20 turnover game against.
And those are games they won.
the Loyola and Syracuse won. They won. The Rutgers one they lost was 20 turnovers. Virginia game they lost this year, 18. Jacksonville, I mean, that one they won early on with those 17. There's two other 17 turnovers game. I mean, this one, it wasn't that clean. They still had, I believe, 15 in there, but 15 as compared to 20. Like 21 last year. And yeah, they beat Syracuse last year, but as this is like on the road, 6 less turnovers, that's the difference. And that's what I was talking about, these inopportune miscues and unforced errors and that kind of stuff. Like, if you add those all up, that happened more often last year, you know, then you're at except they beat the Syracuse last year by one, but that wasn't a close game. I think Syracuse had like 5 pipes, if I remember correctly. That's why I see differently about this team. I feel like there is definitely a lot more, everybody's rowing the same direction. I think last year, just, you know, still trying to implement Milliman's system, I think that, you know, especially on the offensive end, maybe didn't have the the cohesion that you would like from an offensive unit, you know. And I think this year they just seem to be playing just, as you noted, just like freer, just like playing, seeing something, reacting, you know, making the right play, but like less thinking. I keep referring to that one line that Milliman said, it doesn't need to be more open. If he's open, he's open. If he's not, he's not. You know, that type of thing. And that's where you kind of just see, like, at the end of the game, Jacob, you know, Angelus, like, beats his man, minute 30, probably could have killed a little bit more clock. It took the shot, hit the pipe. But I was like, I like the aggression, but, you know, to maybe somebody else shooting that. But it was just like, it's all an opportunity. And it kind of reminded me a little bit of that Rutgers game, I guess last year, right, against Penn State. Where
or, like, no, 21. 21.
21, exactly. Shams. Shams comes down. They're up one that could pull it out, but it just fires it through. Just, you know, and it's just like that aggression or aggressive move could have definitely backfired. But if you're free and you're confident in what you're doing, like, you know, that's why you cash in those goals. And just didn't cash in. But Dean's, a couple minutes, you know, about like 30, 40 seconds later, again, you know, on kind of a little bit of a breakaway, like, take the shot, it's open. That's probably what Milliman said. If you're open, you're open. You know, if you're not, you're not. And he was open enough, took the shot. I think it was two guys backed up. So, you know, that maybe you noticed that, maybe you didn't. But, you know, that was there as, you know, in case it shot didn't find the target. And it went through. It's just like, and that's what I feel like. You could just see that it just seemed to be working. And you know what I feel like? I haven't felt like this about a team, about Hopkins' team, since 2014. Now, 2014 wasn't, you know, a deep run, but that feeling I got when I was watching them about, like, they're not going to back down from a, you know, tough ground ball, that they're going to be able to fight back, even if they are a little bit down. And that, you know, led to a Final Four run in 2015. Now, 2015, you know, that was kind of an inside straight, you know, the way that they finished out the year. But I think, you know, what you're just noting about, like, that mental fortitude and toughness that you get, that I saw in 2015, you know, that was born out of the stuff that they did and improved from 2014 after, you know, not making a tournament in 2013. So kind of I'm all hoping that this similar type of play, you know, last year didn't make the tournament, obviously didn't make the tournament the year prior. In market improvement this year, and then that could lead to, you know, who knows if they get the NCAA tournament, but, like, leads to, you know, potentially a Final Four run maybe next year or the year after. So definitely looking what I'm seeing from the Jays. Feel good going into the Big Ten play. You know, obviously got to take care of Delaware, maybe right before the Rutgers game, which hopefully, you know, we'll see each other on the first, but you know, if you finish up the out of conference play with that schedule at 7-3, Jake, I'll take it.
I guess this is where we maybe, I guess this can tie into the, because we're talking Big Ten, the totally divergent weekends that the Big Ten and Ivy League had.
Yeah, I was just going to say, see, that would be my lead-in. You know, as good as a weekend the Dennis had, maybe the Ivy didn't have. Well, shout-out to Dartmouth, though. Shout-out to Dartmouth.
the best move is not to play. Yeah, one. Yeah, one, too.
Yeah, exactly, right? When you're faced with a big game, the only sensible thing to do is not play.
Okay, business, but... Wow. Whew. I mean, the Big Ten goes 5-1. As we, Hopkins wins, Penn State wins, we talked about. Maryland beats Albany, takes care of business 16-9. Before going to Charlottesville next weekend for a game that Lars Tiffany's only been thinking about for, you know, 300 and something days. Can't wait. no, I love it. Love it. Super, I'm hyped. I don't think I'm gonna go, but it's Maryland, Virginia. What, you know, here. This is you know, we've made our brand on Maryland, Virginia. You know, if you're not hyped up for that, you know, then
well, literally a whole pod on just that game match.
Exactly. Like, I mean, you know, listen. I mean, like, I almost, you know, got the chance, you know, if we beat Notre Dame, you know, we weren't able to close, you know, finish it off. But if we beat the Cavs,
back at it.
Oh man. Oh buddy.
That's this weekend, right?
Oh yeah, next. Yeah, it's, yeah.
So Notre Dame, Michigan, UVA, Maryland.
So yeah, Maryland, UVA's, and then if UVA and Notre Dame both win, that'll be the big one, the next week, after. So sizable, it's palpable next couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Maryland took care of business 16-9 over Albany. And Michigan beat Harvard, as we kind of discussed. And then in a raucous one in Jersey for the, what is the, Tom, trying to get the, sorry, the Maestro Cup.
Oh, yeah. Princeton Rutgers.
Tots Maestro Cup, not Tom, the Tots Maestro Cup. Last year, last year, Princeton kind of took it. You were there, safe. Obviously, Princeton took it to Rutgers, at class of 1952, and they took it to in 2022. This was the first time they've played at Rutgers since 2019. So, been a while since Rutgers got to. Rutgers got to play Princeton at SHI, and they made it count with a great, great game. Just back and forth, you know, offense, you know, tons of great, you know, just haymakers back and forth with one another. And I was kind of skeptical of Rutgers calling a timeout, no T. Because I don't know, you know, it seems like every week with teams going to OT, they call a timeout, drop a play, it doesn't go well. But Eric Saramet said, "Nah, I got this.
I got this, son. Don't worry about it, son. I got it."
Rutgers, phenomenal possession. They had it ready, and so awesome game in Jersey. And Rutgers pulls it out, 14-13. So Rutgers is chugging along, 6-1. And so that, and then the Big Ten, so they 5-1, their only defeat, being, Ohio State, that happened, Ohio State had a because this is a PG podcast, PG-13 podcast, we'll say. We will not disclose the contents of the Ohio State Notre Dame game. Suffice to say,
It was not a great day to be a Buckeye.
No, it was not good. It was not good. So Big Ten goes 5-1. And then the Ivy, oof. Man. As we talked about, Cornell falls to Penn State. Yale does take care of business. Yale, they beat Denver 11-9. That was got a little closer at the end than it was there for a while. Yale kind of had the advantage. Denver kind of pulled within it, but Yale keeps them at arm's length, gets the win. So the Elis, Yale has a couple non-con games later in the year. But other than that, Yale jumps right into Ivy Plate next week. Yale Cornell, big one. And then Penn Princeton as well. So the Ivy, you know, they are locked and loaded next the next couple weeks. Then, as we talked about, Princeton falls to Rutgers. And then in a battle between Philly and the suburbs, but safe likes to refer to it as Philly anyway, Penn and Villanova. So, you know, definitely listen, you know, nothing ever goes wrong in the world when Penn starts losing close games. So,
no harbinger of any bad things to come.
Absolutely not. So Penn has a lead, 8-7, and BJ Farrar is just, I mean, he's streaking down the field. Like we talked about, you know, like we love the aggression, and he's looking to put it away, and he's got the look. And if he scores, it's. I mean, and this one is, you know, there's like just like a minute 50, you know, so. Not, you know, you don't not any means criticizing the shot. I mean, it's a great look. It's probably the, you know, the best look you're going to get in terms of, you know, like at some point you're going to have to take a shot in that position anyway, you know. So he's streaking down the field, winds up just a missile, and Will Vuitton makes the save, and the ball ricochets back out to midfield, and it falls, it makes its way, of course, right into the stick of who else but Matt Campbell, who just picks it up, a little pump fake into the right hand, bam, and it's 8-8. And as soon as this happens, I send to the, you know, the group chat, not to, you know, toot my own horn, but I just
did you hear that? You said not to toot my own horn. I was like, beep, 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 beep. And I was just
like, absolutely. Let me see. Where was it? Let me see. When did I send it at? I said, Penn just gave up a goal that they've scored a million times in the fourth quarter. Bad omen. Because we've all seen these Penn games in the fourth quarter where they score a goal where you're like, how the hell do they do this? Yeah. You know, it's just like, it's every time, you know, you just, it doesn't make sense. And then Nova wins the faceoff to go up, Nova wins the faceoff right after at 8-8. To get the chance to take the lead, to go up 9-8 on a day where Villanova had prior to this won two faceoffs in the entire game. Nova's won two faceoffs the whole game. Two. The whole game. Matt Licata scores with 28 seconds left. What happens after this? Nova wins its fourth faceoff of the game on a faceoff violation. Villanova wins 9-8. I mean, just a preposterous finish. And pretty much Penn loses in a way that you feel like Penn would have won, you know. I was wrong. I read it wrong. No, Penn had not. Villanova had not won only four faceoffs all day. I had read that wrong. They had success at the faceoff dot. It was a 12-8 advantage. That's only. But still, I mean, nonetheless. It's still, you know. I mean, it's, you know, 8-8. I mean, the way it plays out. I mean, Nova's got the lead at 8-7. And they get the Emmett Carroll makes his 20. Penn took a penalty at 2:21 for tripping. That's it. And Emmett Carroll makes a great save, and they get it out to Farrar, and they're still man down, and then it bounces out. Penn wins. Justin Coppola wins the faceoff. Licata scores. They take the faceoff violation. That's it. Villanova wins. In a game that Penn had clawed their way back in, through, because Nova was kind of just chipping, you know, the whole way, you know, Nova looked just, you know, looked a better team, 6-3, and Penn chipped their way back into it from 6-3 down. They led 8-6. Sam Hanley finally broke out. You know, we kind of been waiting for when does Big Sam break through, and he does it in the fourth. Ties it up at 6-6, assists for 7-6, scores to 8-6. And then, yeah, last 6 minutes, three straight Villanova goals. On a day that Emmett Carroll makes 21 saves. And a backbreaker loss for Penn in the Philly four. So that's a tough one for the Quakers, who, of course, did themselves get a win over in Philly this in another, you know, overtime. Through Big Sam, who had four goals, you know, and had the OT winner over St. Joe's in midweek. So, I mean, I guess that's just kind of, you know, it's Penn, you know, it's how I guess the wheel turns, but that felt like one they didn't have and maybe that they kind of stole. If they had got that one, you know, that would have been big kind of momentum, but, man, that was to not be able to pull that one out. Ultimately, I mean, for Penn, it's just the they don't score goals. Yeah, they just don't score goals. Like, it's offensively, their spacing is on offense is just. It's not, it's like they play in a phone booth, you know, everything is like, it's so choked off, you know, you watch it and it's not that the ball doesn't move. It's just that it's so congested. Everybody plays within a tight box, and everybody's kind of, you know, there's been the discussion with Hanley, you know, like, you know, how does, where do you, you know, what's going on with Hanley? I'm like, well, when you want a midfielder to break out, a guy like Sam Hanley, he needs room to dodge. Mm. And like they play everywhere they play is in like a, it's in this confined radius of, you know, they play very little behind they have very little that goes on behind the net because they don't have a true X attackman. And they didn't have Dylan Gerger in this game either. So that limited kind of, you know, and he's not a true X attackman, but he's, you know, gives him some threat shooting from the wing. So that limits them. So they don't have a true, there's just no true X guy on this team. You know, through five games, their leading assister is Shipley, James Shipley from the midfield with eight. So nothing happens from behind the net. So everything comes from up top or the wing. So everybody's going to press out and play them from there. So it's all going to come top down. And it's, you know, they have very little in the way of being able to force the defenses to, I mean, they don't win a lot of matchups, you know, that we kind of talk about. So that doesn't, you know, open up a lot of, you know, it doesn't open up a lot of space, you know, from slides. It really is in terms of, you know, you're not going to get a lot of, you know, like when you watch Handley, like he's a great passer, from up top, but like it's hard to be a skip passer up top because you're passing through so many, you know, bodies just in general. So, you know, you got to get him going down the alley, and try and, you know, find the adjacent. But their defenses aren't reacting to that. Like they just don't, they're cutting that off, and defenses are completely clogging up the middle. There's just very little going on with them offensively. They have so little in the way to relieve pressure on what defenses give them. Like it's kind of like we talk about, you know, with how do you relieve kind of a pressure to, you know, what the defense gives you. You just don't see that. And like even that's the thing, is at least when you kind of you watch an offense, you know, that struggles, you at least see the threat of, you know, what can you attack from. But with Penn, everything comes from up top, like all of it. It's all wing, or like we'll dodge from the wing, or we'll dodge from midfield. Nothing from behind the net. Nothing. And so there's no space. There's no space. It's like dodging into a phone booth. It's tough. It's tough. Their defense, they play good defense. They're 13th in adjusted defensive efficiency, but offensively, they're not scoring enough. And they're 30th, which isn't, you know, but they also don't win enough, you know, faceoffs either. They're 44.6% adjusted faceoff, you know, win percentage, on the year. And I mean, they're played, you know, some good. This was their, in terms of adjusted offensive efficiency, this was by far their worst. This was 16.6%. This one, which is, that one's not gonna cut it. So, but yeah, so Penn falls to Nova, and that gets you, so Cornell loses, and then the Harvard lost to Michigan, and then Brown just got smoked by North Carolina. Just,
mm-hmm.
And then Brown's got the situation where they have seven seniors suspended until March 25th. So
just dealing with it,
So Big Ten goes 5-1 and the Ivy goes 1-5. And the Ivy goes from, you know, just again, not, you know, jumping into, you know, bracketology or anything like that, but the Ivy went from, in terms of their, which we'll update, you know, I'll send out the, try and send it out a little bit, maybe tomorrow, and the out of conference records. The Ivy went from 72% to 62%. That's just, ooh. That's bad. That's significant in terms of the hit you take. That's deep. And they went, if we're talking, the Ivy won one game at a conference against the ACC of the Big Ten. Steep drop in one weekend in terms of the fortunes. If you're looking at where they were last weekend, it was, I mean, the ACC's been sitting pretty for a while, obviously with Al Virginia and Notre Dame have been doing, and then Duke's just been kind of sitting, I mean, in a weird spot, because they haven't played a lot of great teams. But they've won their games. I mean, Denver's not great. Penn's not great necessarily. But the Loyola win, definitely. That was impressive. Blowing out Loyola the way they have. But Duke's taking care of their business. But Virginia and Notre Dame, obviously, you know. But it was all kind of looking, you know, in terms of the three conferences, I think you had, you know, three leagues all looking strong. And then this was just a wallop to the Ivy. That was a big, 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 big hit. I mean, they lost last year, I think
it was 11. 1.5.
I think they lost
1.5 games per team, right?
I think they lost 11 non-conference games last year.
Yeah, it's like just 1.5, 2 games per team. That's ACC numbers, you know, peak ACC.
I think it was 10 they lost, because I think it was 7 among the 6 that got in. And then 10 if you throw in the 3 that Dartmouth lost. So they're at 2. More already. Which is crazy. And the Big Ten's got, they're 20-12, which the Big Ten is also has 12, but 7 more wins.
Yeah. Topsy turvy year, Jay. I mean, that's what we said is going to be open up for everybody. But
I guess Notre Dame. That's the question. Is it, are Virginia and Notre Dame, can they do this the whole year?
I mean, if by whole year undefeated. Obviously, no. One of them is going to lose when they play each other.
Yeah.
But yeah, like a dead Duke North Carolina year where they're clear number ones, but everyone tries to ignore Maryland. You remember 2021? Then yeah, I think you're going to start to see that Duke's going to have a chance to come in because if they have, you know, that hex on the Cavs, and they play pretty well against Notre Dame, So Duke could come in there and just kind of screw things up for those two in terms of like making like a historic year. Do both of them have a chance for undefeated historic year? I think so. I think Notre Dame's definitely impressed me the way that they're able to just consistently throughout this year focus on the games at hand, you know, not trying to hard boy it throughout the season. You know what I mean, just like all screaming and everything. Yeah, they're pumped for each of these games, but like it feels like, you know, their mind's on 2023, not, you know, trying to rectify whatever wrongs they think that happened from last year, which I think is the only way to go forward. We kind of talked, this was me and you, not maybe the entire group chat, but like, you know, the teams that really get over the hump, you know, you gotta feel, you know, play free and like not with like grievance or anything, you know, you want to just play your best. And I think that's kind of what we're starting to see with Notre Dame, with the, you know, UVA's little questions about their defense, but you know, that offense is, elite, but you know, our injury is going to come back to start to come, you know, Cormier, right, didn't play against the Hopkins game. I know that came out shortly before the start of the game. Hopefully, you know, just not going to be anything long lasting or anything, but you know, that's just something that comes into play. And with like Notre Dame, I think like they are solid, but I still think that maybe they're not that deep. So yeah, I think that you could have like questions. I don't think either of them are Maryland from last year. Maryland, you know, as much as people try to shoehorn that in, like, you know, Maryland was just smoking everybody, you know, from UVA's to the Albany's last year. So I haven't seen that. I mean, Notre Dame smoked Ohio State today, but, you know, they needed three overtimes to beat Maryland last week. UVA, like I said, I think they're offensively elite, but that defense, you know, what would happen, you know, they blew Hopkins out in that first quarter, but, you know, what if Timmy Marcille has the game that he had today against Syracuse, against UVA? You know, they could meet a hot goalie, offense isn't able to drop 17, 18 on the opponent. Maybe they got a, you know, sweat out of 12. I saw it live, Jake. I know UVA's, they scare me. They play just so tough and so fast. I saw a little bit of four corners Dean Smith basketball at the end. You know what I mean? I saw like something I'd rarely ever see from UVA, like try to run out the clock, you know, when Hopkins especially got down to only three. So you saw them sweat a little bit. McIntosh didn't bury three goals in a row to, you know, kind of give them the space that they needed to win comfortably. But, you know, that's my point. It's just like I don't see any team that's a 2006 UVA. I don't see any team 2022 Maryland where they're just like annihilating everybody in their path. That's what I saw from UVA in 2006, and that's what I saw from Maryland last year. And I just don't see that. You know, Maryland got caught up against Cornell in the final game, but that was really the only game, and, you know, like for 5 minutes against Ohio State in the regular season where Maryland was ever even like, you know, kind of touched. So I haven't seen that level of play, that consistency, that length of time. Obviously, just because, you know, we're only like 5-7 weeks into the season, depending on how many games you played. So, but I mean, they have a chance. UVA definitely offensively has a chance to be a historic team. And I think, you know, Notre Dame, if they win these next two, you know, they're going to be sitting pretty going into you know, the back end of ACC play. You know, if they can beat take care of what they need to do with Michigan, then beat UVA, you know, then it's really just making sure you got to do with Duke, and then don't slip up before the Final Four. And then, you know, then as long as you get to Memorial Day Monday, like anything can happen. But I don't know. I don't see, like I said, historic teams yet, but I do see two teams that have shown so far that, you know, they're undefeated, they've been able to win games convincingly, and or at least with Notre Dame, you know, they gutted out that triple overtime win against Maryland on the road. So I thought that was quite impressive. So they've definitely been impressive. But like I said, just don't know if any historic team yet, but, you know, there's still weeks to play.
Yeah, for Notre Dame, I think has been I mean, the Ohio State, this was, they just, I mean, they ran them over. That was a absolute, I mean, it was a, some mugging, especially in that second half. They got whatever they wanted. And everybody got involved. 10 different goal scorers. And they only need like two, can only need Kavanaugh and Dobson to have, Chris Kavanaugh or Dobson to have big, big games. That Maryland game was interesting. I think in the sense that they got what they theoretically wanted in the way that their middies were able to dodge past Maryland shorties, and they were able to really manipulate the big little picks. And yet Maryland was just so able to win the matchups with against the Kavanaughs up until, yes, Chris Cav, you know, got the crazy goal to tie it up late, albeit his glove went in the crease. And then, you know, Pat Cav scored the game winner. That, you know, it, they still, Maryland still kind of kept them in check. And that Maryland's offense was able to, score on them more than I thought. Through, I think Maryland was able to win matchups, and Maryland was able to kind of, you know, move the, you know, kind of move the ball and make their defense kind of react and find space for open looks, in a way that I didn't quite expect. And, you know, that's something that I think you wonder about. Like, Braden Urksa was not afraid of Chris Fake. And, you know, someone who's a bit more ahead of the curve than Braden Urksa, you kind of wonder about that. Daniel Maltz, you know, showed, like, Maryland had guys who were able to win matchups in that game, young guys who you just kind of wondered, you know, if they got them in a second game, or maybe if, you know, just someone who, guy, a team who has, you know, different Dodgers, like a Duke or a Virginia, how would that kind of matchup feature out? And of course, you could argue, hey, you know, Maryland won a lot of the faceoffs. However, in the Maryland did a lot of that work offensively in the second half when the faceoffs were pretty much 50-50. So, however, Notre Dame offensively is playing at a really exceptionally high level, and they've got Liam Entenmann. So, what they're, and Chris Kavanaugh's playing, you know, super good lacrosse. The way those two are playing is very reminiscent of the way the Stanwicks played together for, you know, a long time at Hopkins when the two-man game, and it was really effective. And they're playing for very, 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 very good. And again, like we said, it's a complete kind of lacrosse that they're playing right now. And if you play at that kind of level, yeah, you're going to be obviously a Final Four kind of level team. And they're one of the only teams, you know, that we've, yeah, seen at that kind of, you know, level so far. So, yeah, I think it's, yeah, I don't know if it's a historic kind of, you know, a historic sort of, you know, level or anything like that. Granted, there are some margins at that, you know, like 10 goal wins and 13. But, you know, Marquette and Cleveland State are different than, you know, who Maryland had played up to that point last year. But it's compared to what we, you know, thought we'd see, you know, this year. Yeah, I think they're ahead of what some of the, you know, best teams that I thought I would, you know, kind of see this year. I don't know if I'd see a team look as good to this point this year as Notre Dame has. Virginia's interesting. That offense is, I mean, it's got more options than, they got eight dudes with 10 plus points, which is nuts. It ain't a garbage 10 points. Like, we're not talking like, you know, let's let everybody, you know, get a touch, you know, like Patrick McIntosh scored 6 goals against Johns Hopkins. Like, you know, Jeff Connor's got 6-6 and, you know, Jeff Connor plays two way midi. He puts the hard yards in. Schellenberger was held in check relatively by some, you know, Schellenberger's had a 3-game stretch there where he scored 1 goal and it didn't make a difference. And we just kind of as I've been tweeting about, they're just at the one area where Virginia is similar to Maryland, I really think, is that they start the game incredibly fast. They get at you, like, they come at you off the bus, and they're going to punch you in the mouth. Like, and they're going to come at you, and there's a feeling of, like, it's a little bit of a shock and awe. And before you know it, you can be down 5-0 or 3 or 4-0. And it can be a bit like, you know, like some of those, you know, games where teams played against Maryland where, like, you scan, the camera goes over to the bench and they're, it looks like, you know, they're like, they don't look like they have any idea what they're, like, they're just in complete shock, you know? It's like, they look like they're still in, like, they're still in the locker room, you know? Like, the one is always like the one where, like, the Rutgers game, where Breck looked like he was like, what the hell is going on? It's like, what the? And if you do that against them with how good PD is, you're digging yourself a massive hole. And then what they also do is they are so good at the end of the half. Like, Towson was down 6-5 with 3 minutes left in the half. And they scored 3 goals in like 2 minutes. Bang, bang, bang. And it's 9-5. And then Towson did get a goal, you know, to make it 9-6. But it's like, you're right in it. You're right there. And boom. And like Hopkins goes down like 3-0 in 5 minutes. And then they're down 5-0 after the first quarter. And then they claw their way back into it. They're down, what was it? I think, you know, 9-6 with the ball. I think, or 9-5 with the ball. You get that to 9-6, you're in the game. And they gave up a goal, it's 10-5. It's like, oh man. If you get rid of the first, again, you can't, again, you know, aside the title of the bot, you know, those first 5 minutes and then the last minute right there, that's 4 goals. They are so efficient and in those key area, like, you know, in the football is like the middle eight, the first four, the end of the half, the first beginning of, like, that's what's similar. And you're not catching up to, one, you're not keeping this offense quiet for a long enough period to truly make up a deficit. But especially with that face-off guy, that's the key. One, you got to keep the offense quiet. And two, you got to win the face-offs to have the ball to claw back into it. And you can't do both. So you got to do what Towson did today, which was keep y'all, and they that had to, you know, Evan Long making a bunch of ridiculous saves. And then you gotta, but you can't do what they did where you have three goals at the end of the half. Like, Towson gave you the blueprint there. And listen, better teams than Towson are gonna, you know, have defenses who can, you know, give up less, also turn the ball over. Like, Towson had, like, Virginia caused 7 turnovers on Towson in, like, the first quarter. So, you can't, you just can't give up those goals in the key spots. In the beginning, you can't give yourself a big deficit, and you have to, if you're in that game late in the half, stay in the game. Stay in the game for as long as you can. Because I do look at that defense, and like we kind of talked about goalies, Matt Nunes, he's not a bad goalie, but he's also not going to steal them. Like, if he's not going to steal them a game, like, he's, if it's, and their defense is like, we're a month in now, and their defense isn't great. It's like, it looked like after the Ohio State game, and then like the Richmond game too, like, okay, maybe it's kind of clicked. And now the Hopkins game, I mean, you were there. Yeah. You know? Yeah. And then the Towson game today, it started, you know, they started super hot in that first, you know, quarter. But then Towson was able to get some things going. In the second quarter at different points. So they're not, it's vulnerable. I think you can score on them. And so, and part of it was Nunes was, I think part of it was just like Nunes didn't make saves, but that's kind of where he's at 49% right now. He's been the last two games this week against, he may had 18 saves on the 25 goals given up. You know, against Towson, against Ohio State, and, you know, Richmond, he was strong. But before that, Michigan and Harvard, like, he's up and down. That defense, like we talked about, you know, last year we waited for it to come around, and it just never really did. Well, now we're a month in, and I don't think it's been bad, but I also don't think it's been, I don't think it's been exceptional. Like, it's 42nd in adjusted defensive efficiency, which, again, I think that's a bit, I think that's, you know, to some degree, there's different, different, you know, stats and, you know, just kind of, you get a better read the more deeper you go into that. They force a lot of turnovers. Like, they're 15th in turnover, kind of how many turnovers they force in there. But, like, that's kind of similar. It's more similar to where they were last year than where they were in 2021 or where they were in 2019. So, you know, it's just something to look at. You know, it's just something to keep an eye on. So they're definitely, you know, they're the two best teams right now, those two. And it's different than kind of what I had thought, you know, in terms of where I thought we'd have a wide open year. Where I thought there'd be like maybe no great teams. I think right now we do have two great teams, or at least two very, very good teams. But there's some, I think there's some vulnerabilities there. Whereas last year with Maryland at this time, you really couldn't talk yourself into there being any vulnerabilities. Like, it was just like, I don't know if like this then this happens, then, you know, but I think there could be some that could, you know, open itself up to maybe Duke could get there, or, you know, North Carolina's got a great defense, you know, potentially, you know, maybe that'd be, it'd be unlikely, but I think they're great. I think they're both great teams. I think, but great teams can have bad days. 2006 Virginia, 2022 Maryland are different. Those teams don't have bad days. That's, you know, that's the difference, you know, like great teams do have bad days and can lose, which I think we could very well see. But yeah, maybe not. We'll see.
Okay. No, we hit everything I wanted to hit. Post with the but Jake, anything you want to close out with? I don't want to jump the gun. It's just definitely a healthy discussion of all the games I was worrying about. Georgetown back?
Does Georgetown get the same favorite status that Maryland gets in the Big East?
I mean, Providence had a nice little pull out the overtime win against Stony Brook, but aside from Nova, I don't really
like. See, yeah, like, does Nova have to beat? Nova has to beat Georgetown for them to be. I mean, Nova Georgetown's like the last week of the. So I mean, I think Nova's looked. You know, I mean, Nova beating Penn State looks really good. They also beat Penn. They beat Delaware. The Yale loss.
I'll say this about Nova.
Nova's looked the best, but you look at what Georgetown's done the last 3 years in the league, and it's a little hard to be like, especially coming back the last 2 weeks and beating Princeton and then beating Richmond, it's hard to not still keep them as the incumbent favorite in the league, I think.
Yeah, you know, you gotta beat the man to be the man. It's, said, but with Nova, I also just feel like we've seen this before, where they have above average good, you know, I don't want to say great, but you know, really good regular seasons, and then either Denver or Georgetown has still won, you know, the Big East. So we're talking about the crown, regular season, or the Big East championship. I do think, yeah, they'll to be like the new dog, you know, the big dog on the corner, and you gotta, you know, kind of chase away the other dog. So like, yeah, the Hoyas are a big dog, even though they haven't maybe gotten off to the great start. But like, I do kind of with Zach, like, with his ELO rankings and stuff like that, I always kind of think of it as like a, you know, 200-day moving average type thing. And, you know, Georgetown's moving average is still pretty high, even though they had, you know, kind of a soft start to the 2023 season. They've, you know, the one team and program that has shown, you know, I don't want to say long haul, but at least for the medium haul, that they've, you know, they're a real team. And I think I would need to see Nova beat them in the regular season, or, yeah, knock them out of the Big East tournament before, you know, they don't get Maryland, you know, most favored nation status. America used to have that with different countries. Like, they don't get that yet. Yep. Maryland, Virginia are the only teams most favored program status in my book. But if Villanova knocks off Georgetown the regular season and then comes out with the AQ, you know.
I'm just thinking who's the favorite in this year, and
I still say Georgetown.
I think for now Georgetown, but it's I think Nova's looked.
You know what? Maybe Georgetown's like, you know, every 3 years we've been killing it in the regular season. Not that they're given. We always say winning games is the most important and the only thing to do at college across. But it's like, you know, they've done the whole, you know, 15-2 regular season, you know.
Yeah.
That type of stuff. But I don't think, like, you know, I don't think that, like, going 14-3 or whatever.
They need to – all that matters is making the Final Four. Like, that's
– right? And so that's why – and that's why I keep feeling just like, they're just like, hey, you know what? We're going to do what we need to do in the out-of-conference games. I think they're going to turn it up a notch when it comes to Big East play. And then, yeah, I just see maybe just a different Georgetown team. Like, coming back against Richmond, like, that's a game, given Georgetown proclivity of, like, you know, sometimes going silent on offense and just having a bad half at the wrong time, you know, and for them to come back against Richmond, like, you know, that showed me something. And then, like I said, are they back? I like your tweet from last weekend. You know, where did this come from? Maybe, you know, it's kind of what we've already said. There's just always there. We got these, you know, two close games at Penn loss, the Hopkins loss. You know, you flip those around, they're not looking that bad. And that's why, yeah, I just still see them as a favorite in the Big East.
Yeah, it's not, you know, they're not far from... their offense is getting better. I like what I've seen. I mean, and again, yeah, they're not. It's not far from being, you know, 4-1. Offense is good today, I guess, Richmond. But yeah, I need a bit more. Back. I mean, they'll be in the top 20.
Yeah, this should come back to the poll this week. I'm probably going to get 18th or 19th or 17th, one right around there, back end.
Yeah. For them, it's, you know, win the tournament and see how it plays out. I think the changes they've made have been beneficial. I liked moving Bundy to the attack. I like kind of Minicus as more of a, you know, table setting option. I mean, they still need Haley had 2 assists, so that's good to get him going a little bit. Haley is, you know, Haley's like archetype. I don't know if he can do it because he's just not the. If Haley had Jacob Angelis' speed,
I was just gonna say Jake. Yeah.
If he had that speed, it'd be a different equation. But it's not quite there. He might be better a passer. Pure in terms of the vision and the, you know, but he's not as fast, and that's the difference, is Angelis can threaten the defenses in terms of the speed in a way that Haley isn't able to. But they have been able to get him going, and that's been beneficial for them. Defensively, in the fourth quarter, they held up well. They got to figure out, you know, kind of the short stick game is sort of their long poles, I think, are strong. It's just, you know, they really miss, as we talked about, missing Geddes has been, you know, kind of the real question there, I think, for them. I think they're a solid team. Like, I think you look at these last couple games, I think it's maybe just kind of bouncing back around. I don't think they're far off the where kind of that top 10 mix where you see Hopkins at, and I mean, I think they're a worse team though. Like, I think you're just sort of seeing maybe the kind of turning back in their favor, but I do think some of the changes they're making is, you know, kind of improving. I think this year is really kind of one for the so far kind of changes teams are making are a month in, is where you're seeing some coaches having some impacts. like what Rutgers has done since that Loyola loss, I think has been really impressive in terms of the changes they made, because it was obvious they couldn't do the same sort of the same thing defensively, or not the Loyola loss, pardon me, the Army loss. They couldn't, it wasn't the way they played defensively the last couple of years, was not was not going to be as, they were not a slide heavy team, with when Kearse was in goal, because especially in terms of they would slide down low and but like adjacent and up top, because they were fine with you shooting, because they'd give you kind of shots up top, or they would give you those kind of, you know, 15-yard shots, because it was let's let Kearse get a save and then let's let those guys go long so we could, you know, get the transition. I think now without Kearse, it was, you know, against Army, a lot of those same looks, they went in the cage. And now it's been a lot more kind of quick on the doubles. And Kyle Mullen's been really strong since then, but it's, you know, more strong low, you know, that's kind of been his, you know, strength. And, you know, they've made some really good adjustments defensively. And I think that's been a testament to the coaching staff, Jimmy Ryan, their defensive coordinator, and Brecht. And that, you know, they didn't just stick to what they did. Like they said, you know what, like we don't have kind of the pieces we had in the past. And, you know, they haven't, you know, it's not quite, you know, the NASCAR, you know, approach, you know, maybe just, you know, it's, they're not, you know, they don't run transition quite as much this year. But they're still winning. They've, you know, they've adjusted, and they're still winning games. Penn State, you know, you're seeing, like, you know, they've obviously, Penn State's just more kind of a, you know, but I Penn State, like, kind of talks about, like, I think the game plans they had against Yale and Cornell, the Yale one we talked about, like, with the way they zoned them up, that was a great game plan from Tams. The one today, like, they beat Cornell. Penn State just beat Cornell by doing what Cornell does to teams. Joe Bucci was a phenomenal hire, defensive coordinator for Penn State, coming over from UMBC. UMBC just had, it's a testament to the staff that UMBC has over there with that Ryan Moran puts together at UMBC, and Ryan Moran's a heck of a head coach himself. But because obviously Jamison Kester has done a fantastic job, Johns Hopkins as defensive coordinator. But Bucci's done a fantastic job at Penn State as defensive coordinator this year. But they hounded them in the middle of the field, and the way they were able to what Cornell did last week against Cornell, like last week against Ohio State, Cornell knew that Ohio State didn't have comfortable ball handlers, and they didn't have guys who could hit the double team, like, or hit the open man when they double teamed him. Like, Ohio State had open guys, but they weren't going to hit it. They weren't going to hit when they sent the double, they couldn't pass out of it. And Penn State knew that Cornell doesn't quite yet have those guys who are comfortable passing out of it. And they knew that they had the speed and the quickness to close on guys. And they sent double, they sent triple teams. And they ate them up, and again, just sent havoc in the middle of the field on the ride. And what it also did was that by the time the game got to the fourth quarter, even when it was close, by the end, Cornell looked like they were running in cement. They looked tired. And so just it kind of, you know, the old phrase, like, run with the runner, that you kind of have to, you know, this was more of a just send havoc, play havoc with a team that likes to create havoc. And it was really effective. So I think you've seen, Maryland's, I think, made some good, adjustments offensively that have kind of helped them out. So I think this is a chance in terms of in a year of, kind of parity. I think you're sort of seeing coaches being able to kind of make impacts. And the ones that aren't are probably the ones that are going to, kind of maybe fall by the sort of fall closer, fall off, and more down the pecking order as things goes on.
A lot more to play out, but I mean, Jake, you for
want to do poll or save that for?
I still got to finish my back end of mine, but
If you're finishing up, we can do it. So we'd save it for midweek.
Yes, yeah, say if Wednesday or something, or whenever next week pot up. Still got Notre Dame at number one. I will confess that, Jake. I'm sorry.
Don't apologize to me. Apologize to Mr. Tiffany.
Exactly. Mr. Tiffany. I'm sorry. I know it's lit. But I'll wait for
the you should ask him to come on the podcast when you were
We had a moment, Jake. We had a moment. It was great. Saw him and then saw President Daniels. I was like, yo, man, the hop lax boards are going to be, astonished myself. I was like, hey, you know what? Actually, President Daniels loves the program. He was actually at the game. Listen, nobody's ever going to have Brody level of love for the program. That guy was the greatest. He was going to drag us all the way up to Division I for everything. But Daniels has been a good president. So. But no, I should have asked Lars. Like, hey, Mr. Tiffany. Like, yeah, so you're in the safe.
Mr.
But yeah, if this was
If Lars breaks out the short sleeve, the tee, and the tan next week, I'll know on that. That's what
I'm trying to think of, like, guys who remind. I was thinking of, like, Alan Thicke. I mean, just gods of the '80s. With the tans. There's a couple like game show host ones from the '80s and '90s. I was like, Lars enjoyed himself in Naples. He was out in the sun. He probably did 13 miles in the morning.
Do we save the heat bit with Tillman and Tiffany for the midweek?
If you want to give a sneak peek at I think it's gonna be this is gonna be a great bit.
Oh, so what was it? I forget how it came up. How did it come up? I forget the. I completely forget the like impetus of it.
The action is a juice joke. Oh yeah, no. I can't believe we never use heat on the pod to compare Tillman and Lars.
Yeah, like that was one. Like I could never believe that the diner scene with like Pacino and De Niro. And then you used the scene in Heat where Sizemore tells De Niro, he's like, for me, action is the juice.
That was again. Tillman's in practice was when Pacino was like, give me all your guns! Give me all your guns! And he's trying to shake his informant for information.
I forget what you were sending it in the group chat for.
I think this was just a statement, Jake. It was a side quest conversation. I'm looking at it right now. It's definitely just me and you type of thing.
What were you saying? It was last week. Let me see if I can find it.
Yeah, it was Sunday. All of a sudden, I think something happened. Maybe it started in the group chat or something, but something happened, and then I get a message from you. I can't believe we never used heat on the pod.
It just totally clicked for me. Because you decided you were gonna go to the game. And then you were like, and you said that when you made eye contact with Lars, you were gonna tell him that, like, for me, action is the juice.
Yes, that's it.
And I was just like, I can never believe that we've never used, like, a diner scene to compare Lars and Tillman before on the pod. And I think Tillman is Pacino.
Tillman? Oh, yeah, definitely.
I think Tillman's Pacino. He lives it.
Oh, yeah. He's like, brother, I'm going to take you down. If it's, you know, he's like, it's between you and the mailman. He's just trying to go home to his kids. I'm going to take you down, brother. But yeah, you're right. Because Lars is De Niro. He goes like, but there's a flip side to that coin. Yeah.
So who's Michael Mann is the question.
Man, is there anyone that connects them two together? I was just thinking any coach. Yeah.
That's a great question. I mean, they're both New York guys.
Zanowski?
No. Tillman played for Moran, but Lars didn't. Because Tillman's a Cornell guy, and Lars played for Starship, didn't he?
Yeah, bro. Yeah.
Yeah. Then Lars coached at I don't know. There's not really, I don't think they have a, I don't think they have a connection, yeah. They were both in the Ivy at one point with, with Tierney, I guess.
Maybe. Tierney, I was just saying, BT?
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah, we'll break down on next pod.
it just clicked. It clicked perfectly. Just like when you set that out, I'm like, oh my god, I can't believe we haven't done that bit before. just like yes, 1000% yes. Just, like absolutely. 100%. Oh, absolutely. It's, yeah, because, you know. Because it's like the old, because I forget what I read at one time. It was like comparing Pacino and De Niro's, like roles or whatever. And it was like, you know, like De Niro's, you know, he's like great at playing these mobsters, you know. But Pacino feels like he is one. It's something like he just lives it. It's like, it's just, it's all he does. It's like he does these interviews. I never forget when he did the Zoom interviews, like during like COVID whatever, like SVP or whatever, from his house. And it's like, man, it's like nothing there.
Sweetest minimalism, man. All right. Folks, thanks so much for listening in. Can't wait for the next few weeks, Jake. So a lot of dominoes still to fall, but it's going to be great watching them go down. Really appreciate everybody supporting us. Looking forward to the Ides of March, getting through March Madness, and then lacrosse really gets into center stage around April. So looking forward to it, man. Only a few more. Jeez, Jake, it's almost April. 3 more weeks and it's already April. Absolutely. But looking forward to getting back on pipe mics with you later on this week. And from all of us here at the Cross Commission, thanks so much for listening.
Becky Lynch for president, and stay hydrated.